Thanks, Heather. Thanks, Gordon. It's just great to be able to come and to share together and to think about what it means to be a follower, a disciple of Jesus. And Heather was reminding us of that journey we've been on, or that we're on, to see what that means as a church, to be a community of people where we have that deep desire to live as disciples, as followers of Jesus. And if you've been with us over the last few weeks, you'll know that we are thinking about that at the moment by looking at five different contexts for discipleship, five different ideas as to what it means to be a follower of Jesus, five different ways in which we can work that out in our lives. And this is the third one that we're looking at. We started by thinking about what we called the public context, that place where we gather together to worship God. What we're doing this morning, to celebrate being family, to be encouraged, to be refreshed, to be renewed and restored. We went on to think about the divine context, the amazing privilege we have of being invited to live in close, personal, daily relationship with God, the God who created all things, the God who loved us enough to send his Son to die for us. And as Heather reminded us at the beginning of our time together, we get to live in that relationship with God. Amazing and wonderful things. But this morning, we're going on to think about something called the transparent context. So named because it's where we can choose to be open with, totally honest with, accountable to a small group of people. Maybe it's one other person, or two, three, four others. When we introduced this idea of developing a discipleship culture back in July, I remember being in a small group of people sitting over there on that side of the building discussing this whole thing. And one of the things that a number of people in that group said to me was that this one, the transparent context, was probably the thing they would find the most difficult, something that was outside of their comfort zone. And I get that. It requires being able to identify that group of people, that one person, those two or three people, that you think you can build this type of deep relationship with. It requires having developing a deep sense of trust in the people you are with and a confidence that things that are shared in that group will stay within that group. It involves giving other people the freedom to challenge you when you are not living up to the standards you expect of yourself. It's demanding. But when it works, it can be a really uplifting and encouraging context, a place where you can be totally open, and where you can share deeply about what is going on in your life, where you can encourage and be encouraged, where you can become closer followers of Jesus. And it can be worked out in a variety of ways. One of the things I've found useful, for example, is to keep in close contact with two friends from Bible college. So this is going back 10, 11 years. And these were people I met and I spent time with and I journeyed with. One of them I shared a room with for 3 years, and we got to be close. We are now living in different parts of the country. We're not able to meet up frequently. We do twice a year. But we keep in email, we keep in text contact, and we've been able to share some really important things together to encourage each other through some really difficult times that we each have experienced at different stages along the way, and to share some of the joys that we experience as we seek to follow Jesus. It's something that Heather and Isabel and I are focusing on as a key part of our relationship as leaders here. We're taking time when we meet to share about what is going on in our lives, about what God is saying to us, how he's encouraging us, how he's challenging us, what we're looking forward to, what we may not be looking forward to pray for each other and the things we are seeking to do. We've been doing it in a number of different ways for a long time since we've been working together. But it's something we've chosen now to be very intentional about and focused on. We believe it's important. As you will know, if you've been with us when we were looking at these other contexts, we are basing our thoughts and getting some ideas from the life and the example of Jesus as told in the Gospels. And we're going to do that this morning. And this morning, I want to tell you a story told from the perspective of John, one of those early followers of Jesus. One of those three people that Gordon mentioned as he was reading those verses to us. So let me tell you a story. We had no real idea what we were signing up to that day. Down on the shore of the lake, where Jesus appeared and called us to follow him. I could see that Peter and Andrew, they were fishermen just like me, they had joined him. And there was something about him that drew James and me to him as well. So we left the boat behind, we left the family business behind, we left Dad behind wondering what was going on, and we followed Jesus, the start of an amazing adventure. And we were there when crowds of people started getting interested in Jesus and following him. We were privileged to be a group of 12 people that Jesus called around him to be his inner circle, to journey with him, to witness the amazing things that he did. But then, even beyond that, the three of us, Peter, James, and John, found ourselves as a sort of inner circle. Privileged to see things and to share things with Jesus that no one else did. It wasn't something Jesus made a big announcement about. But we suddenly realized that we were the three people who Jesus kept on inviting to be part of something special. I want to tell you about three of those occasions. And looking back, I can see that Jesus was doing something very special for us in each one of them. The first I can remember was when we had just come across the lake in a boat, as we often did. And we were surrounded, as Jesus so often was, by a large crowd of people. Suddenly, one of the religious leaders of the town, a well-respected man, came rushing up to see Jesus. He was clearly in deep distress. He fell down at the feet of Jesus, begging him to come and help him. And as he explained what was going on, we found out that his 12-year-old daughter was dying. All the things that they had tried had not helped. But he seemed to have a deep belief that Jesus could heal and restore her. And so Jesus agreed to go. We were all with him, the 12 of us. There was a large crowd. We followed to see what would happen. I can imagine the frustration of Jesus when partway through that journey, Jesus was interrupted by a woman who had been ill for 12 years, as long as my daughter had been alive, and was hoping that Jesus would help. Jesus did stop. He spoke kindly to the woman. He healed her. It was good to see. I am sure that Jairus would have preferred it if she had waited until Jesus had been able to see and hopefully heal his daughter. And then as we approached Jairus' house, some people came to meet him and said it was all over. His daughter was dead. His mission to find help had failed. Jairus, from his words, from his actions, from his demeanor, from what he looked like, we could tell he clearly loved his little girl deeply. And I expect at that moment he felt his world was crumbling around him. But Jesus, hearing what was going on, hearing what had been said, seeing what was going on around him, encouraged Jairus to not give up, to continue to trust, to continue to believe, to not be afraid. And it was in that moment that Jesus singled us, Peter, James, and me, out. We were the only ones he allowed to go with him. And so we and the girl's parents were the only ones privileged to see what happened next. He pushed through the crowd of mourners, telling them that the girl was not dead, but just asleep. They laughed. They knew what death looked like. And I must admit, I wondered what Jesus meant when we went into the room where the child was. She certainly looked dead to me. There was no life there. That spark seemed to have gone. But then we saw Jesus in total, confident certainty, reaching out, holding her hand, telling her to get up. And straightway she got up and began to walk around. Jesus knew that he could even bring her back from death. That it would have just been as though she'd been in a deep sleep. He was able to restore happiness and wholeness to that complete family. And we were privileged to see that demonstration of his caring compassion and his power at work. Another amazing thing that we were invited to was something that I will remember for the rest of my life. A few days before this particular event happened, Jesus had been saying some very disturbing things to us, explaining that in his near future, ahead of him, he was going to suffer. He was going to be rejected by everyone in authority. He was going to be killed. He made it very clear that this was going to happen. And it was difficult to hear. We had such high hopes for what Jesus was going to do. So it was difficult, even when Jesus went on to explain that after that, he would come back to life. Big things for us to try and get our heads around, as well as trying to work out what it would mean for us. We had committed ourselves to him. If he was gone, if he was taken in that way, would we be next? What would we do? And then Jesus invites the three of us, Peter, James, and me again, to go with him up a high mountain. No one else. We were totally alone. And suddenly, Jesus was different. He was still the same person, but his clothes became the whitest thing we had ever seen. His face shone as brightly as the sun. We couldn't look at him. Then on top of that, we saw two of the great figures from our nation's history, Moses and Elijah, appearing and talking with Jesus. Peter, as he so often did, tried to work out what was going on. But as he was doing that, we heard God's voice speaking to us clearly from heaven, from a bright cloud, telling us something special about Jesus. That Jesus was his son. That he loved Jesus. That he was pleased with Jesus. That he was the one we should be listening to. He was the one we should be paying attention to. It was absolutely terrifying, but something I would have not missed for anything. It helped us with trying to piece together our understanding of who Jesus was. This person who was speaking such powerful words and doing such amazing things. Another time when Jesus invited us to be close to him was a very different occasion. It was one of the times when we saw him being really vulnerable and struggling with what was going on. And to be honest, it was one of those times when we let him down really badly. And it's difficult to think back on that moment. You remember I said that Jesus had been speaking about being rejected and killed. From what he was saying now, this was just around the corner. It was just about to happen. He led us out to a place called Gethsemane. We'd been there before. It was a quiet, peaceful garden in Jerusalem. A really refreshing and enjoyable place to come to. But on this occasion, there was no joy. Just a deep sense that something bad was just about to happen. We were all with him, the 12 of us. Well, 11 of us now, because Judas wasn't there. We found out later that Judas had agreed to hand Jesus over to the authorities, the ones who wanted to take him and to kill him. And that was difficult for us to cope with. He'd been our friend, he'd shared so much with us. How much more difficult must it have been for Jesus? And Jesus asked us, the 12 of us, to sit and wait. Well, he went off to another part of the garden to pray. But then just as he was going to move off, he looked again at the three of us and invited us to go with him, to share that moment with him. We could see that he was very sad, that he was more troubled than we had ever seen before. He was very open, telling us that he felt overwhelmed with sorrow, that it was so bad he felt close to dying. A difficult thing to hear from someone who meant so much to us, but a privilege to be trusted to know what he was going through. He was going to go on a little further on his own to pray. I know that those moments of quiet prayer with his Father were really important to him. But he wanted us to be, the three of us, to be aware of what was going on. He wanted us to be there to support him. He wanted us to be praying as well. And this is where we let him down. Even with all that was going on, even with the concern we had for what Jesus was going through, we were so tired that we just went to sleep as Jesus struggled and wrestled with what was ahead of him. So what did Peter, James, and I learn from these intimate moments with Jesus? We saw some of his power as he healed that little girl and brought her back to life, showing that he was even more powerful than death. We saw something of who he really was, as for those few moments, we saw behind the everyday person and saw the reality that he was God's Son walking among us. We were invited to walk with him through dark and difficult times, to be those he trusted and was willing to share deeply with. Real, life-changing privileges that, among other things, helped develop us and prepare us for what Jesus wanted us to do after dying on the cross, after coming back to life, after going back to heaven to be with his Father. So what does John's story have to say to us in Crewe nearly 2,000 years later? What does it say to us about the benefit and the value of these transparent contexts, those places where we choose to share life with 1, 2, 3, 4 close friends? I think it tells us that they are contexts where we can develop a deeper understanding of the power of Jesus. As we share together what God is doing in our lives, what he's doing in the lives of others, as we share stories of times when we have had the privilege to serve God and to see him at work. And this enables us to encourage each other in further acts of discipleship as we respond to the command of Jesus to go and make disciples. It tells us that they are contexts where we can develop a deeper appreciation of who Jesus is as we share with each other the things that God is showing us, the things that the Spirit is revealing to us about Jesus. It tells us that they are contexts where we can be open and honest with each other, where we can share deeply about what is going on, the joys and the sorrows, the successes and the failures, and go through those experiences together. They can be really powerful and uplifting experiences. And the question for each of us this morning is whether this is something we want to do, something we want to engage with, whether we would like to be in such a group. And it's a question for us as individuals, This is not something that we are going to organize as a church. We're not all going to arrive back here next Sunday morning and you'll be given a sheet of paper saying you are with this group of three people. It could be interesting, but I can pretty much guarantee it would not work. Each of us individually need to think and pray about who we would be happy sharing such a relationship with, and to talk to them and to see where that goes. Please pray. Please think about whether this is something God is calling you to do. And if so, please pray and think about who you believe God is calling you to journey with. And then speak with them and see where God takes you on this exciting journey of sharing life together as followers of Jesus. Something to think about, something to reflect on, something to pray into. And one of the things we're trying